Thanks for listening to Schlereth than Evans On Demand, brought to you by Gravina's Window Center of Littleton. If you're in the market for replacement windows, there's only one place to turn. That's Gravina's Window Center of Littleton. Visit them online at windowsforyourhome.com.
You're listening to Schlereth and Evans on Sports Radio 104.3, The Fan.
Wait, Troy Rank in for Mark. So why is boring better? I get it. Your first instinctive reaction is, what are you guys talking about? Boring. We don't want boring on offense. But think about it, Troy. You're talking about an offense that last year scored 18 points per game. You're talking about an offense that has a new quarterback. You're talking about an offense that has a new offensive coordinator. You're talking about an offense that once again is reconfiguring their offensive line. You're talking about an offense that does not have an identifiable identity. Is that redundant? Identifiable identity?
Yes, it is redundant.
Okay, but you get where I'm going. They don't have an identity that is clear. So,
I'm not sure.
So all of a sudden, with all of that, we don't have a clear running back. There's questions at tight end. There's questions at third wide receiver. There's questions all across this offense. And suddenly, you're expecting what? Fireworks? You're expecting this an offense to be a touchdown better per game than they were a year ago? That they're going to jump from 18 points per game to 25?
Absolutely.
How? What are you basing that on?
I'm not sure.
Yeah, you're just hoping and wishing. How about we be more realistic? How about we be more pragmatic? And we understand that this is an offense that is in transition. It's an offense that's trying to build something. Let's keep it realistic. And let's also recognize that this is still a defense that has the potential to be very, very good, if not elite. So why can't boring be better? It's based on the idea of efficient. It's based on the idea of high percentage. It's based on the idea of not making mistakes. It's based on the idea of let's hold on to the football a little bit longer. It's based on the idea of, hey, we'll try to score, but at the least we're not going to make a mistake that puts our defense in harm's way. We'll take advantage of our brand new punter who was absolutely booming the ball at practice yesterday, and we'll pin an offense back and we'll let our defense go to work. What's so wrong with that?
I think part
won
of
you a Super Bowl a couple years ago.
Right. Part of it is the public doesn't like it. I mean, it's kind of tied into gambling and fantasy football. You want the big scoring plays. You want the big hits. You want the excitement. You know, I've said, you know, when I covered changed from covering baseball to football, baseball's a romance and football's a bit of a one-night stand. I mean, so this idea, the thrill of football, it doesn't necessarily, it is not congruent with boring, but boring wins. And I know John Fox gets ripped around here, and, you know, punting is a skill and play the field position game. He was doing it at a time, though, when he had a quarterback where you didn't need to be boring. Where our point is, with the way this team is constructed now and the way the league is trending cyclically, boring for the Broncos offensively is better. It is a solution to fit the personnel. They aren't going to be the Air Coryell Chargers. They're not going to be the Peyton Manning team from, you know, 13 and 14. They don't have that kind of those kind of weapons. You know, those guys aren't walking back through the door. And Stokely might walk through the door here at some point. But anyway, they're not walking
those
through the door.
Those balls can be really slippery.
So adjust to your personnel. Adjust to your personnel. And back to my tease, part of that is a running game.
Uh-huh.
And I am bullish on why not roll Royce Freeman? Why not roll with Royce? They're going to have they have the youngest running
Bourne
back.
Bourne is better, followed by why not roll with Royce?
Because of his name. He is a propane tank with legs. This guy is built like C.J. Anderson, if not a little thicker. He is experienced. When you talk to him, he has a maturity beyond his years. He is going to challenge for the starting job. And talking to sources over there, they've been impressed with his transition to the pro game. Again, NFL running back, you need to see it in pads. But I'm just saying, so far, so good for Freeman to challenge Booker for the starting job. If one of those guys doesn't have a good year, Case Keenum's going to be hard-pressed to meet expectations.
Well, here's Case Keenum talking about the Broncos running backs.
Yeah, you never know with that group.
You know, you never know which of the guys are going to step up or which of the guys are going to have to step up. So, you know, you want to work with all of them. You want to talk through all different decisions and things with all those guys. So I think they've all come along. They've all come a long way. And I'm excited to see those guys when they put pads on. That's really when the competition gets going for the running backs. When you put the pads on and you see those guys running downhill.
Troy, Case Keenum has an interesting perspective, I think, on running backs and the debate between the young running back and the veteran running back, because last year Minnesota started with Dalvin Cook, who was a high draft pick for them. He got hurt. They had to turn to Latavius Murray, a veteran, who was just rock solid for them the remainder of the year. And I'm wondering what kind of running back Keenum would prefer. Does he want the Dalvin Cook type, which the Broncos are chock full of with young running backs, or would he prefer the veteran? I would think that quarterbacks...
But who's the veteran?
Well, they don't have one. That's what I'm saying. Would he prefer they have one?
Well, yeah, of course. You know, in an ideal world, for Keenum, I'm sure they kept C.J. Anderson, but they just... They're not willing to pay for that when they feel like they can get similar production from a rookie at a much lower rate. I mean, that's just the business of piecing a roster together. You know, C.J. Anderson would have helped the transition of Keenum. There's no doubt, because he was a coach on the field. He really understood protection in that regard in terms of pass pro. Freeman's got a chance for me to be a sleeper type player, to be, you know, in that conversation of defensive rookie of the year. Like, because if he starts and they run the football, like commit to it like I think they're going to, then he should have a good year. And that's what I'm saying. Part of being, when you're going to have a big year, you have to have opportunity. You can't just, you know, get 8 carries a game and do it. But there's no reason why Freeman can't challenge for the starting job. Booker has looked better. He's looked more instinctual. He's said that his understanding of the offense is helping him play faster. The bottom line with Booker is this. I like Devontae Booker. You know, he's a good dude. You can't be at 3.6 yards per carry and be a starting running back. He has to either make guys miss at the point of attack, which is on every running back if you talk to line coaches. You got to make one guy miss, or break that tackle. If you can't make him miss at the point, then you got to break a tackle. And that is something he has not proven he can do yet. Maybe this is, we see it in camp and go, okay, that's the new version of him, 2.0. But if he doesn't, then Freeman is going to be right there ready to take that job.
Folks not responding well to the whole boring is better idea. Just a quick sampling. Boring is for losers and coaches afraid to lose their job.
That is correct.
Another one. Boring won't win against New England or Pittsburgh. We've had boring the last 2 years. How'd that work out for you? First of all, the Broncos have not been boring the last 2 years. You know what they've been? They've been mistake prone. That's been their problem.
They've been reckless.
They've had no real identity, no real clue, no real plan. I mean, you could call them a lot of things over the last couple of years. I wouldn't say boring. I'd say disorganized, clueless,
dysfunctional,
and mistake prone. Boring. Look.
Well, the texter's saying boring's not going to beat the Steelers and the Patriots. They couldn't beat the Dolphins last year. They couldn't beat the Chargers.
Yeah, let's lower the bar here a little bit.
We're trying to get them on track to where they're like back to respectability. You have delusions of adequacy if you think this team's going to throw out an offense that's suddenly going to challenge the Patriots and Steelers. That's a few years ago. They need to get an offense that gets them back in the game.
Right.
Remember, folks, when we talk about 5-11, I think some of you are missing this. They went 2-10 over their last 12 and were not competitive in 8 of those games. So we're trying to identify something that gets you back some roots to an identity, to you, so you're making progress. In a bigger macro world, no one likes boring offense. You want to throw it around the yard and have fun. They don't have the personnel for that. When they've tried to do that, as Mike just highlighted, they make mistakes. They turn the ball over. And how'd that work out for you?
Let me give you some numbers here, okay? And we talked about this yesterday. We drove this point home. And it's not an aberration. It is by design. Teams are coaching more and more offensively to minimize mistakes rather than go for big plays. That's the NFL right now, as evidenced by the fact that you only had three quarterbacks last year in the NFL who threw for more than 30 touchdowns, whereas all the league leaders, all the best quarterbacks, were basically at 10 interceptions or below. So against that backdrop, here was what the Broncos got from their quarterbacks last year. 19 touchdowns, 22 interceptions. Here's what opponent quarterbacks did against the Broncos last year. 29 touchdowns, 10 interceptions.
The Broncos, ball security is job security.
The Broncos threw 22 interceptions. They only picked off 10. That's the new NFL, folks. And you better have an offense that takes care of the football, that avoids mistakes, that is willing to punt the football away. And
punters are just as important as other positions.
The Broncos didn't do that last year. So if you want to say, egads, I don't want to hear boring, we've had boring. No, the Broncos offense has been many things over the last couple of years. Boring is not one of them. You get, as you have said, what was the line you said yesterday? That if Case Keenum has less than 10 interceptions, playing a 15-16 game schedule, that if he has less than 10 interceptions, the Broncos will be a playoff team?
Correct. And more, if I take it out, extract it further, a 3-1 touchdown interception ratio makes him a playoff team.
All right, so if he's 24-8, 24 touchdowns, 8 interceptions. Folks, I'm telling you, that will not be a lights-out pyrotechnic, oh my God, did you see that kind of offense? It'll be efficient. It'll be boring. You know what it'll be? Effective as all get out. So what do you want? And I get it. You're paying a lot of money for your tickets. You want to be entertained. Are you not entertained? I don't know. Winning football games is entertaining to me. Winning football games ugly, as they did in 2015, was very entertaining. Winning a Super Bowl was really fun. And you know what that offense was in 2015? That wasn't even a boring offense. That was a mistake-prone offense. What was Peyton when he got benched? 9 touchdowns, 17 picks?
Yeah, it was ugly.
Right?
It was ugly.
And he wasn't that much better when he came back.
But
it was boring.
He survived that year because the defense played out of its mind.
Exactly. But that was boring offense that year. But it worked. But it worked. So can it work here with this team? It comes down to what do you want? What do you want as a fan? Do you want to win? As one person said, we had a saying in the military, slow is smooth and smooth is fast. You could say boring equals TDs and TDs equals exciting. I mean, you take a look at the top offenses in the NFL. New England does not run an exciting offense. They are pick, 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 pick. Get in the end zone, score a touchdown.
I love Tom Brady.
It's not exciting. You know, it's not like the year they went undefeated where they're throwing the ball 50 yards down the field to Randy Moss. It's pick, pick, pick with Edelman and Amendola and all, and Chris Hogan and all these receivers, and then, you know, occasionally a big pass down the scene to Rob Gronkowski. But it's not lights out. It's not exciting. Again, you've got an NFL that over the last 2 years has had 8 quarterbacks total throw more than 30 touchdown passes. What does that tell you? Touchdown passes are down, but interceptions are down. And that's not just some statistical aberration. It is being coached that way. So if the rest of the NFL is doing it and the best teams and the best offenses are doing it that way, why do you have a problem with the Broncos doing it that way? And I guess my follow-up question to that is, okay, you want exciting. I got Millennial Ben back there, right? Millennial Ben is like, no, no, I don't want boring. I want exciting.
Absolutely.
Give me... And I'm more than willing to read your texts. I'll give you the credit. Please put your name on it. Tell me how this offense, from what you've seen over the last couple years, okay? What we gave you the number last year. Over the last 3 years, the Broncos quarterbacks have thrown 58 touchdowns and 47 interceptions. Terrible quarterback play. So everything you know about this offense, you tell me how this offense has the potential to be lights out, to be exciting, to be worth the money you're paying to go watch them play.
Simple as that. Win more games.
No. We're not talking about winning games. Because my point was that winning games is exciting. You're telling me that, no, I need an offense that is exciting. You tell me. Make your case. You're all lining up to say how boring. I don't want boring. I want exciting. Okay. Tell me how that gets done. And I'll wait. Tell me how this has the potential to be a explosive, high-scoring, lights-out, entertaining offense. Can't wait. Can't wait to hear the reasons why this is going to be the case. In the meantime, the king is here. See, you're right. You know what? We laugh about it, but I think there's reason to believe that one of their biggest weapons could be Marquette King. I know. Millennial Ben is laughing. He doesn't want to hear that.
Punters are just as important as other positions.
But Troy, come on now. How is this offense going to go from averaging 18 points per game to averaging 25 points per game? Unless they're doing it efficiently, cutting down mistakes, taking advantages in the red zone, being boring. Boring is better.
And they got
embrace it.
And they got better today, as I just talked to multiple sources on this. I think Schefter treated it at first, and it was kind of the plan. But DeMarcus Ware has been hired as a part-time consultant to coach their linebackers and their D linemen. He'll come in several times a month. He's not going to be involved in game planning, but he will be a consultant to work on pass rush. He's not moving here and taking some full-time gig. That's not the plan. But they found a happy medium to keep him involved, to be around the outside linebackers, to be around the D linemen, work on technique. This isn't a role as it sits today where he's going to be in the game planning as a coach. It's a consultant to come in and enhance the skills of some of their pass rushers. The players embraced the idea when he was here. Then, is my understanding, again, talking to sources, DeMarcus is here today, expected to meet the press and talk about it. This is a good thing. A part of their honest self-evaluation is getting better in the coaching staff. DeMarcus Ware being involved in this kind of role could not be better for the Broncos. Players absolutely love him. They appreciate his insight. He can only make guys better. And this allows him to be around a little more rather than kind of texting. The one guy this could benefit dramatically is Bradley Chubb. So good on the Broncos for making this happen. I think it's only going to help their defense, and it's certainly going to help the microwave the development of Bradley Chubb.
All right,
Chubb.
So a consultant. So what does that mean? Is he grinding 16 hours a day?
No, exactly. That's what I want to make clear. He's not, going to be in the background working 100 hours a day on film. He's going to fly in a few times a month, be it 4 to 5 practices per se. Just, I'm using that number as an example, and be there to be a resource for the players as a consultant, not flying in and doing game plans. And that he doesn't want, I know from talking to DeMarcus in the past, even in the recent past, he doesn't want a full-time coaching role. He's with his family. There's a reason he retired. So this is the happy medium. He was kind of a guest instructor a few weeks ago, and from that, it's become that role has grown into a more formal consultant role where we bring you in a few times a month to, hey, help Chubb with this or help Vaughn with this or help. And here's why this works, because some of these don't. The guys love DeMarcus Ware. Absolutely love his insight, and they hold him in reverence. From Vaughn, your best player, to Shane Ray, to Shaq Barrett, to Bradley Chubb. This can only help them, even if it's just a little bit, in terms of the development of Bradley Chubb. It's worth it, and I love this. I partly because I'm partial to Marcus Ware. I mean, the guy gets it. There was few players I've ever been happier to see win a ring than DeMarcus Ware.
And you know what else it speaks to? It speaks to, I think, a different attitude over there of, look, we're all in this together. There are no bad ideas. We're putting egos aside. We're not worried about protecting turf. You saw last year, you saw assistants who I believe had more power than they deserved, had more influence than they deserved. And thus you had a head coach who probably deferred to them too much. And I'm talking about guys like Eric Studisville and Mike McCoy. And what I sense here is you've got everybody checking their egos at the door. Bill Musgrave, he's the offensive coordinator. But it's obvious he's been getting all kinds of input as they reconstruct this offense. Gary Kubiak's voice is being heard. Why shouldn't it be heard? The guy's a Super Bowl winning coach. And if you can get somebody like a DeMarcus Ware to come in, again, it's checking an ego, because I could see a defensive coach be like, well, wait a minute. You know, I'm here working every single day, and this guy's going to, you know, fly in
right.
four or five times a month.
Again, that's the danger of it. The guy
it's
that,
a is it a danger, or is it,
but it,
is it an example of how things are changing and things are better?
It can be dangerous, except with Ware, it makes sense because of who he is. He's not going to come in, untie the shoelace, and then leave.
Mm-hmm.
He's accessible to these players. They hold him in reverence. He will work with the coach. He's not an egomaniac going, all, this is how I did it.
Right.
Like, he's not that guy.
But coaches still have healthy egos, too,
they
and they
do.
Have to be accepting of it.
They do, but DeMarcus functioned as a coach in his last couple years here. So it's not like, oh, I've never heard that guy say anything in film his entire career. Now he thinks he's a coach. DeMarcus has been playing the role of assistant coach and in a consultant basically the last 4 or 5 years of his career. So it's a natural transition, and he's worked with the members of this coaching staff, including Joe Woods. So that's why it'll work. This isn't groundbreaking. This was kind of in the offing. It was just, could he make it work with his schedule? So what became a guest instructor role at minicamp is now something with a little more formality. It's not official yet, but it will be a little more formality, that he's a consultant, not a coach. Let's not confuse that. So he's around several times a month, and then accessible to the players, and basically just a resource. And a valuable resource when you consider they just drafted Bradley Chubb,
mm-hmm.
who will benefit directly from the knowledge of DeMarcus Ware. And if you think it doesn't matter and you want to roll your eyes, go back to look at how Vaughn's career changed after the arrival and pairing him with DeMarcus Ware. Look at Shane Ray's best season with DeMarcus Ware. Go back to Dallas and look at how some of the young guys played and benefited. So I'm just saying it can help. I'm not saying you're going to turn a guy into a Hall of Famer, but the idea that he can help a player is absolutely credible.
Then why stop there? Why not?
Because he doesn't want to be a head coach.
I'm not talking about why DeMarcus Ware stops there at this is his role. Why do the Broncos stop there? Why isn't Peyton? We'd love to have you come in and do the same thing.
Has Peyton ever done anything halfway?
Quarterbacks.
Has Peyton ever done anything halfway?
I don't know. His schedule is such that
he
could probably only fit in 4 to 5 days a month.
Peyton, I can't see buying into anything being like kind of half pregnant, being halfway. He can't do it. Peyton's either all in or he's not. Like, he wouldn't do that. I can't see the Peyton Manning I covered would never say I'll be there a couple times a week, because that's not how his brain is wired.
I don't know. Peyton post playing days, Peyton in his retirement days has had a bounce around, I'm doing this, I'm doing that, you know, variety, flavor of the week type feel to it that you would never expect from Peyton. I mean, Peyton's doing this, he's doing that. I mean, there's not a whole lot of...
My best friend Peyton Manning.
There's not a whole lot of pattern to what Peyton's doing right now. So I don't know. I think, based on what I've seen from Peyton post-playing days, is he might be open to the idea of, all right, this week I'm going to be the Grand Marshal at some race. Next week I'm going to pop into Dove Valley and work with the quarterbacks for a few days.
I don't see it.
No?
I don't see it. I just not in terms of football. The rest of his life, yes, where he just bounces and he's the most interesting man in the world.
Right.
But in football, he's never approached football that way. And when he's football, he is all into the way that it's an obsessive, compulsive attitude. So I can't see it in football. The rest of his life, yes, bouncing from golf course to racetrack to Europe. Yeah, football, I can't see him.
But by the way, since we're talking quickly about Brandon Stokely's best friend, when exactly is he going to become a grown-up and move on to the next phase of his life?
Peyton. I would say after this season, I would
expect him to be... You think so? One more season of living the life and then...
He's either going to be a full-time broadcaster at that point or try to be like general manager or part ownership of an NFL team. I think he's going to give it one more year.
I'm not letting up on the boring is better idea. I think boring is better for the Broncos offensively, and you just got to come to embrace the idea of what boring means.
We'll I think you're projecting, though. You look in the mirror every day, and you came up with that. You're projecting. You're playing amateur psychologist here. Giving yourself, like, I'm good enough. I'm strong enough.
You know what?
And gosh darn it, people like me.
I look in the mirror, and you know what? boring can work. That's next.
Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan presents Schlereth and Evans.
You know, I guess it depends on your definition of master. I'm always trying to master it. I'm always trying to perfect my craft. You know, I think, you know, to get to master level, you know, it's hard to say. It's different for every offense, but we're getting there. We're getting close, but, you know, I never feel like I've arrived. I'm always working. I'm always looking for little nuances, little things. Like, hey, when this you get this look into this play, think about this. So I always try to, you know, add notes to my folders and add notes to, you know, different, you know, looks and plays so that, you know, no matter what comes up, I'm, you know, I've prepared for it and I'm ready for it.
Little nuances, being prepared, knowing all the ins and outs. The devil is in the details, having the details down. You know what that is, Troy Reich? That's what goes into boring is better.
Professionalism.
Add that in there as well. Look, when I say the Broncos theme on offense should be boring is better, I'm getting instant recoil. But think about it. Think about it. Think about what boring is. Boring is not taking unnecessary risks. Boring is just taking what the defense gives you. Boring is going out and completing 67% of your passes, not by winging it all over the field, but by finding the really good matchups and finding the easy receptions. Boring is what Joel Klatt likes to tell us. You never go broke making a profit. And a five-yard gain is a profit.
Boring is taking a single and double when you don't have home run hitters.
There you go.
It's safe. Get your single. Get your double. We don't have a roster of guys that can knock it out of the park. So why are we trying? Why are we trying to do that? And that's what my point was, you know, with the Mike McCoy offense when they were miscast. They're trying to run an offense around the three wide set and deep pass drops when they didn't have very good linemen on the corners, at least in experience. In Bowles' case, they didn't have – they had 1.5 threats because Emmanuel Sanders got hurt. So, I mean, what again, why run that offense when it's so ill-suited to your personnel? Boring can be taking the single and double when you're not a home run hitter. Because sitting around trying to hit a home run when you don't hit home runs leads you to be in AAA hanging out in Albuquerque
now
with
look,
the apartment guy.
Maybe Royce Freeman, Cortland Sutton, Deshaun Hamilton, Jake Butt, maybe they are all ready to become dynamic playmakers in the NFL. Maybe they are. Maybe these are guys that are just poised to just watch. Just put the ball in their hands and watch what they can do. Maybe they're going to be those kind of guys. But until I see it.
Right. Yeah,
until
again, that's
I
totally
see
different.
It,
yeah.
Until I see it, then you know what I want from this offense? I want less mistakes. I want higher conversions on 3rd and 1. Listen, all those frustrations that you have felt as a Bronco fan watching the Broncos fail on 3rd and 1, if all of a sudden they're keeping that same drive alive with a boring 2-yard gain, won't that change your Sunday viewing experience when it comes to watching Broncos football if just those boring 3rd and 1s are converted in a boring way and those drives continue and they end up in touchdowns or even field goals? Won't that change your whole experience as a Bronco fan? There's nothing wrong with boring. Again, I go back to this whole idea that for years, if you came out and said, oh, that quarterback, he's a game manager, it's a backhanded compliment at best. It's a flat-out insult at worst. But look around the NFL. Look at how less often now the ball is in the air going down the field. Look at how it's all intermediate passes. Look at how it's all dink and dunk. Look at how it's all high percentage. I mean, we just got done with a draft period in which we were raking poor Josh Allen over the coals because his completion percentage wasn't 60%. My God, if you don't have a completion percentage of 65%, you're not worth your salt as a quarterback. Well, guess how quarterbacks get to 65%? Are they getting to 65% by hucking the ball down the field?
They're not.
No, they're getting to 65% because it's all high percentage. based on accuracy, based on getting the ball out quickly. It's based on a 5-yard pass being just as good as a 5-yard run. You know, so
3-to-1 touchdown to pick ratio. Now, and I would ask this because I get it. Like, boring as a strategy is hard to embrace. Again, on the big picture, but was Case Keenum boring last year? If you ask Vikings fans, 22 touchdowns, 7 picks, was he boring? And when he had to make a play, I think that is the one nuance of this. It's like you're boring, 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 then boof, neon color play. You know, it's like basically khaki, lime green.
There you go.
That's the key, is you've got to be boring to the point where you're efficient. And then when that one or two plays a game, whether it's with your feet, Case Keenum, and you scramble 8 yards for a first down, or whether it's a 22-yard pass down field, you have to be able to make that.
Yes.
But to have that as your strategy, to throw downfield and throw it all over the yard. Teams that throw, quarterbacks who throw the ball more than 30 times a game have a historically low winning percentage. There's very few guys do it and get away with it consistently outside of Aaron Rodgers, you know, Drew Brees, Tom Brady. First ballot Hall of Famer, no doubt, all-time great. So the idea of being boring, it can be effective. And maybe it grows into something. Maybe you do get the bedazzler and put it on your members-only jacket. And that would be in the form of Courtland Sutton or Deshaun Hamilton. Uh-huh. But Mike and I aren't naive enough to sit here and say, Sutton and Hamilton are going to be great and Jake Butt's going to be great. We've learned our lesson the last 2 years.
Yeah, I'm not falling for that banana in the tailpipe anymore.
The offense was terrible last year by every measure outside of running the football the second half of the season. So I'm not talking about some Star Wars offense, throw the ball around. I want and see the offense be efficient first, and then once it becomes efficient, maybe throw some nitromethane in the gas tank.
Well, I've seen a talented guy. You know, he's got a huge catch radius. He's got great ball skills. As a route runner, it's coming, but he's so big and strong. I mean, if he doesn't win with the route, he wins with his body, so that's important also. But he's a worker, he's mature, and he will help us in the fall.
All right, there's Vance Joseph talking about Courtland Sutton, who's opened eyes with his just obvious play above the X's and O's athleticism that he has out there. Okay, if this guy is poised to be all that, if he's the next guy where it's, hey, you send this guy down the field and you just throw it up there, balls in the air for a long time, the whole crowd's got that feeling of anticipation, everybody's holding their breath, and then this guy goes up and makes this amazing play because of all of the skills that Vance Joseph says he has. Awesome. There's your exciting. There's your home run hitter. Now you're not boring. But until that happens, what else you got? That's better than boring. What do you got? I mean, what do you got? So until you see that you have in Jake Butt a guy who can just beat his man at the line of scrimmage, do a quick little shimmy shake, and then burst down the seam, open, throw the ball down to him, and he's just completed a pass for 25 plays, and he stands up, and he's like, and you're like, whoa, that was like Gronkowski-like. Until I see that, guess what? You better be boring. You better be efficient. You better be smart. You better be detail-oriented. Embrace it, folks. It's not the worst thing.
So during the break, Mike and I will be eating bologna sandwiches with Top Ramen and drinking Dr. Thunder.
Good for you, bud.
Because you know why? Because you know why? We did that once at a time. You know why? Because we had no choice.
We had no resources.
Okay? Once we got the resources, give me a steak, baby.
Exactly. Then you can start throwing an appetizer in.
There's no steak here.
Right. There's no.
There may be steak.
There may be steak. There's been no sizzle. There's been no sizzle. They have been an acoustic band that has no Eddie Van Halen.
Right.
If you find that guy, plug it in to the amp. Let's go.
Let's rock. Right.
Breakout Eruption. I'm all for it. Mm-hmm. Until then, let's stay acoustic. Sit on the chair and play the guitar, John Mayer. Let's go.
Oh, no, you didn't do that.
I'm just kidding.
You just said the Broncos have a John Mayer offense. Wow. Boring sounds like even better than John Mayer.
And we're having some fun with it, but the key is they've got to learn to be efficient first and then play off efficient.
Right.
They have to have an identity first and then play off that. They have to take care of the ball first and then go from there. They haven't done any of those things. Nobody can sit here and tell me they know what the offensive identity has been the last 2 years. Nobody can sit here and tell me that they haven't been reckless with the ball, because they have. They need Keenum to have a 3-to-1 touchdown-to-pick ratio, and they need to run the football. And that might look methodical and boring at times, but you know what is not boring? Winning.
Yeah.
You know what they call an ugly win? A win. They need to get back to that.
Father Mo's Best, presented by Home Depot, is right around the corner, Father's Day, and your dad could receive up to $1,000 worth of tools from Home Depot delivered to his house by Mark Schlereth. Head to 1043thefan.com/dad. Upload a 30-second video on why your dad deserves to be honored on Father's Day. Small steps, but maybe positive baby steps made by John Gray last night. That's next.
It's Schlereth and Evans on Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan.
Okay, you know me, Troy Rank, Mr. Silver Lining, all about the optimism, always. So even though the Rockies lost again, even though they continue to spiral closer to last place than first, even though I have the prickling feelings creeping up my back of June's swoons past sort of gnawing at me, let me find the bright side. John Gray did only give up a few hits yesterday over six innings and did strike out 10. Now, he gave up 4 runs, including the first inning 3-run homer. He walked some people, but signs of growth? Reasons to be optimistic? Reasons to be positive that maybe, just maybe, he'll start to turn this around?
Well, I look at this two ways. Yes, there's something to hold on to. You always want that as a coach when you look at an athlete and say, hey, give me something I can believe in. And he has swing and miss stuff last night. You know, the Phillies have struggled, but Gray got right, and 10 Ks and a few hits speaks to his stuff. The disappointment is that we're talking about Gray as if he were a rookie and saying, oh, yeah, there were glimmers and there was things you like about it, but this was the year he was supposed to put his foot down and be a guy that goes 15-7 with a 3.8 ERA and gets 200 innings. And we're talking about in framing this discussion, like, frankly, like he's a fourth, fifth starter. And that's reflected in their team record. They're going to be around 500 if he doesn't dominate to a point where he's got double wins to losses. You know, that's what I'm saying, like 14-7 or 15, you know, that kind of year. And instead, he's sitting around 500. He is a reflection and symbolic of their team. When I've always cautioned people, there's not always linear growth with pitchers. The league adjusts to them. They get research on them. They understand their sequences. And Gray, because he doesn't have a great third pitch, gets vulnerable. That's why I still wonder at some point if he doesn't end up as a closer and a back-end reliever. But to your point, Mike, yes, he gave you a little something to hold on to, but I didn't want to be talking, if I'm a Rockies fan, I didn't want to be talking about John Gray like he's Jeff Hoffman this season. And that's what this feels like. Oh, I saw some good things there. That's not what I wanted to hear out of the guy who started on opening day.
You were on the Rockies beat for over a decade and a half. You saw everything in baseball. You were completely immersed in it. So when I ask you this question, I'm going to ask you to draw on that. The idea that being an ace and living up to that ace designation that gets placed on you early, is it obvious right from the beginning? Or can you think of examples of guys that clearly are aces, clearly lived up to what the hype was, but it took a while? Mark likes to tell the story about with his son Daniel when he was first starting out in Arizona. He was a teammate with Max Scherzer,
right,
who Scherzer and his son both got sent down to the minors at the same time. Scherzer, in his 2 years to begin the bigs in Arizona, was a combined 9-15. Then he goes to Detroit. He was better. He was 12-11. But it wasn't really until his fourth year in the majors that he took off and became Max Scherzer. So is there reason to think that, you know, a guy like John Gray could still end up on that kind of career trajectory?
Not Max Scherzer. That's not fair to him. I mean, Max Scherzer is the best pitcher in baseball, but could he be an ace?
That's what I'm saying.
Or could, let's take the ace term, could he front a rotation
right,
where you feel good about him matching up with other guys who are number ones? And right now he's not. You don't when he's pitching against other ones like Aaron Nola last night. I like Nola's chances. I mean, Nola's a Cy Young candidate. He's the guy that's on that linear growth who has dealt with some injury, a little bit of an uneven start, hiccups here and there. Now he looks like an ace. Gray, to answer your question, has the talent to ascend because he throws 97 and he's got a wipeout slider. But he's Max Scherzer throws from multiple arm angles, has multiple pitches he can throw for strikes in any count. What's hurting Gray is when one of his two pitches, which is either the fastball or slider, is not on, he gets exposed. Guys sit on pitches, they sit on location, and they hit him. Anyone in the league right now, I tell this all the time, you could fire a bullet from 60 feet and these MLB hitters would hit it.
Mm-hmm.
Every guy in the league can hit a fastball. You have to have something to keep them off your fastball. Even Aroldis Chapman, who threw 102 last night, he still has a slider. And he's a closer. That's my point of Gray. Like, sometimes I look at him, I just wonder if he doesn't profile better as a late-inning arm. You don't want to give up on that yet, but he's pitched like a fifth starter his entire career statistically. It's time for him to figure that out. And part of it's mentally taking games by the nape of the neck and saying, I'm going to end this losing streak. That's part of what, not ace, but just your frontline starter does. When Ubaldo Jimenez that year threw a no-hitter and nearly threw one in Houston. He threw one in Atlanta. Every time they went out, they thought they were going to win. Yep. The next year, Ubaldo's dealing with contract squabbles. He's upset. He starts the year 0-6, losing to the Pirates at home before a near sellout crowd. And players come up to me like, how can we see ourselves as a playoff team when our ace can't beat a call-up from the Pirates who just got sent back down? And that's my point with Gray. If he can't beat guys he matches up against, how could you be a playoff team? John, I mean, like, enough. Like, put your foot down and figure it out. It's time. And if he doesn't, this is who they are. A middling team just wallowing in mediocrity. And that would be unfortunate.
Hey, look, the last thought on the whole boring is better thing. We're having some fun with it. But let's be honest what this is all rooted in. This is an admission that the Broncos, under John Elway, have done a terrible job of bringing in offensive talent. No, I'm sorry. It's not opinion. It's fact, okay? There's been a huge talent drain on this offense.
You know what? That's too bad.
No Pro Bowlers have been drafted. It's just been a wasteland. So this is what comes home to roost, is that you have no choice because of the talent drain and because of the guys that could be your next infusion of talent are still so young and unproven, you have no choice. You have no choice. So you may call it boring. I'd like to think of it as being efficient and smart and high percentage, but that's the only way this offense is going to work. There's no way this offense is going to be exciting and explosive. It can be effective. It can be efficient. It can be boring. But that's what you have right now. And it's a reflection of what has happened around here over the last few years. Nobody likes it, but it's the way it is. So we all better be grown-ups about it and acknowledge that's what it is and that's what it needs to be like if this thing is going to be good enough to get this team into playoff contention. Boring does work. Boring is better.
I'll have you eat your bologna sandwich and like it. And you're like, I'll have a cheeseburger. I'll have a ham. You'll have nothing to like it.
God, I've always loved bologna, though. I have always loved bologna.
To the shock of no one, Khaki Pants.
My bologna has a first name. It's O-S-C-A-R.
No, it's K-E-E-N-U-M.
There you go.
Get the jersey, dude. Let's go.
Pritch and Cecil. Talk about exciting. Talk about explosive. They're next.